Sri Aurobindo, The Synthesis of Yoga. Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge. Page 287, Chapter 1, The Object of Knowledge. All spiritual seeking moves towards an object of knowledge to which men ordinarily do not turn the eye of the mind, to someone or something eternal, infinite, absolute, that is not the temporal things or forces of which we are sensible, although he or it may be in them or behind them, or their source or creator. It aims at a state of knowledge by which we can touch, enter, or know by identity this eternal, infinite, and absolute, a consciousness other than our ordinary consciousness of ideas and forms and things, a knowledge that is not what we call knowledge, but something self-existent, everlasting, infinite. And although it may, or necessarily must, since man is a mental creature, start from our ordinary instruments of knowledge, yet it must as necessarily go beyond them and use supra-sensuous and supramental means and faculties. For it is in search of something that is itself supra-sensuous and supramental and beyond the grasp of the mind and senses, even if through mind and sense there can come a first glimpse of it or a reflected image. The traditional systems, whatever their other differences, all proceed on the belief or the perception that the eternal and absolute can only be, or at least can only inhabit a pure transcendent state of non-cosmic existence, or else a non-existence. All cosmic existence, or all that we call existence, is a state of ignorance. Even the highest individual perfection, even the most blissful cosmic condition, is no better than a supreme ignorance. All that is individual, all that is cosmic, has to be austerely renounced by the seeker of the absolute truth. The supreme quiescent self, or else the absolute nihil, is the sole truth, the only object of spiritual knowledge. The state of knowledge, the consciousness other than this temporal that we must attain, is nirvana, an extinction of ego, a cessation of all mental, vital, and physical activities. Of all activities whatsoever, a supreme illumined quiescence, the pure bliss of an impersonal tranquility, self-absorbed and ineffable. The means are meditation, a concentration excluding all things else, a total loss of the mind in its object. Action is permissible only in the first stages of the search, in order to purify the seeker and make him morally and temperamentally a fit vessel for the knowledge. Even this action must either be confined to the performance of the rites of worship and the prescribed duties of life rigorously ordained by the Hindu Shastra, or, as in the Buddhistic discipline, must be guided along the Eightfold Path to the supreme practice of the works of compassion, which lead towards the practical annihilation of self in the good of others. In the end, in any severe or pure jhana yoga, all works must be abandoned for an entire quiescence. Action may prepare salvation, it cannot give it. Any continued adherence to action is incompatible with the highest progress and may be an insuperable obstacle to the attainment of the spiritual goal. The supreme state of quiescence is the very opposite of action and cannot be attained by those who persist in works. And even devotion, love, worship are disciplines for the unripe soul, are at best the best methods of the ignorance. For they are offered to something other, higher and greater than ourselves, but in the supreme knowledge, there can be no such thing, since there is either only one self or no self at all, and therefore either no one to do the worship and offer the love and devotion, or no one to receive it. Even thought activity must disappear in the soul consciousness of identity or of nothingness, and by its own quiescence bring about the quiescence of the whole nature. The absolute identical alone must remain, or else the eternal nihil. This pure jhana yoga comes by the intellect, although it ends in the transcendence of the intellect and its workings. The thinker in us separates himself from all the rest of what we phenomenally are, rejects the heart, draws back from the life and the senses, separates from the body that he may arrive at his own exclusive fulfillment in that which is beyond even himself and his function. There is a truth that underlies, as there is an experience that seems to justify this attitude. There is an essence that is in its nature a quiescence, a supreme of silence in the being, that is beyond its own development and mutations, immutable and therefore superior to all activities of which it is at most a witness. And in the hierarchy of our psychological functions, the thought is, in a way, nearest to this self, nearest at least to its aspect of the all-conscious knower who regards all activities but can stand back from them all. The heart, will, and other powers in us are fundamentally active, turn naturally towards action, find through it their fulfillment, although they also may automatically arrive at a certain quiescence by fullness of satisfaction in their activities, or else by a reverse process of exhaustion through perpetual disappointment and dissatisfaction. The thought, too, is an active power, but is more capable of arriving at quiescence by its own conscious choice and will. The thought is more easily content with the illumined intellectual perception of this silent witness self that is higher than all our activities, and that a mobile spirit once seen is ready, deeming its mission of truth-finding accomplished, to fall at rest and become itself immobile. For in its most characteristic movement, it is itself apt to be a disinterested witness, judge, observer of things, more than an eager participant and passionate laborer in the work, and can arrive very readily at a spiritual or philosophic calm and detached aloofness. And since men are mental beings, thought, if not truly their best and highest, is at least their most constant, normal, and effective means enlightening their ignorance. Armed with its functions of gathering and reflection, meditation, fixed contemplation, the absorbed dwelling of the mind on its object, shravana, manana, shridhidhyasana, it stands at our tops as an indispensable aid to our realization of that which we pursue. And it is not surprising that it should claim to be the leader of the journey and the only available guide, or at least the direct and innermost door of the temple. In reality, thought is only a scout and pioneer. It can guide but not command or effectuate. The leader of the journey, the captain of the march, the first and most ancient priest of our sacrifice, is the will. This will is not the wish of the heart or the demand or preference of the mind, to which we often give the name. It is that inmost, dominant, and often veiled conscious force of our being and of all being, tapas, shakti, shraddha, that sovereignly determines our orientation, and of which the intellect and the heart are more or less blind and automatic servants and instruments. The self that is quiescent, at rest, vacant of things and happenings, is a support and background to existence, a silent channel or a hypostasis of something supreme. It is not itself the one entirely real existence, not itself the supreme. The eternal, the supreme, is the Lord and the all-originating spirit, superior to all activities and not bound by any of them. It is the source, sanction, material, efficient power, master of all activities. All activities proceed from this supreme self and are determined by it. All are its operations, processes of its own conscious force, and not of something alien to self, some power other than the spirit. In these activities is expressed the conscious will or shakti of the spirit, moved to manifest its being in infinite ways, a will or power not ignorant, but at one with its own self-knowledge, and its knowledge of all that it is put out to express. And of this power, a secret spiritual will and soul faith in us, the dominant hidden force of our nature, is the individual instrument, more nearly in communication with the Supreme, a surer guide and enlightener, could we once get at it and hold it, because profounder and more intimately near to the identical and absolute than the surface activities of our thought powers. To know that will in ourselves and in the universe and follow it to its divine finalities, whatever these may be, must surely be the highest way and truest culmination for knowledge, as for works, for the seeker in life and for the seeker in yoga. The thought, since it is not the highest or strongest part of nature, not even the sole or deepest index to truth, ought not to follow its own exclusive satisfaction or take that for the sign of its attainment to the supreme knowledge. It is here as the guide up to a certain point of the heart, the life, and the other members. But it cannot be a substitute for them. It has to see not only what is its own ultimate satisfaction, but whether there is not an ultimate satisfaction intended also for these other members. An exclusive path of abstract thought would be justified only if the object of the supreme will in the universe has been nothing more than a descent into the activity of the ignorance operated by the mind. As blinding instrument and jailer through false idea and sensation, and an ascent into the quiescence of knowledge, equally operated by the mind through correct thought, as enlightening instrument and savior. But the chances are that there is an aim in the world less absurd and aimless, an impulse towards the absolute less dry and abstract, a truth of the world more large and complex, a more richly infinite height of the infinite. Certainly, an abstract logic must always arrive, as the old systems arrived, at an infinite empty negation or an infinite equally vacant affirmation. For, abstract, it moves towards an absolute abstraction, and these are the only two abstractions that are absolutely absolute. But a concrete, ever-deepening wisdom, waiting on more and more riches of infinite experience, and not the confident, abstract logic of the narrow and incompetent human mind, is likely to be the key to a divine, superhuman knowledge. The heart, the will, the life, and even the body, no less than the thought, are forms of a divine conscious being, and indices of great significance. These too have powers by which the soul can return to its complete self-awareness, or means by which it can enjoy it. The object of the supreme will may well be a culmination in which the whole being is intended to receive its divine satisfaction. The heights enlightening the depths, the material inconscient revealed to itself as the divine by the touch of the supreme superconscience. The traditional way of knowledge proceeds by elimination and rejects successively the body, the life, the senses, the heart, the very thought, in order to merge into the quiescent self, or supreme nihil, or indefinite absolute. The way of integral knowledge supposes that we are intended to arrive at an integral self-fulfillment, and the only thing that is to be eliminated is our own unconsciousness, the ignorance and the results of the ignorance. Eliminate the falsity of the being which figures as the ego. Then our true being can manifest in us. Eliminate the falsity of the life which figures as mere vital craving and the mechanical round of our corporeal existence. Our true life in the power of the Godhead and the joy of the infinite will appear. Eliminate the falsity of the senses with their subjection to material shows and to dual sensations. There is a greater sense in us that can open through these to the divine in things and divinely reply to it. Eliminate the falsity of the heart with its turbid passions and desires and its dual emotions. A deeper heart in us can open with its divine love for all creatures and its infinite passion and yearning for the responses of the infinite. Eliminate the falsity of the thought with its imperfect mental constructions, its arrogant assertions and denials, its limited and exclusive concentrations. A greater faculty of knowledge is behind that can open to the true truth of God and the soul and nature and the universe. An integral self-fulfillment, an absolute, a culmination for the experiences of the heart, for its instinct of love, joy, devotion, and worship. An absolute, a culmination for the senses, for their pursuit of divine beauty and good and delight in the forms of things. An absolute, a culmination for the life, for its pursuit of works of divine power, mastery, and perfection. An absolute, a culmination beyond its own limits for the thought, for its hunger after truth and light and divine wisdom and knowledge. Not something quite other than themselves, from which they are all cast away, is the end of these things in our nature, but something supreme in which they at once transcend themselves and find their own absolutes and infinitudes, their harmonies beyond measure. Behind the traditional way of knowledge, justifying its thought process of elimination and withdrawal, stands an overmastering spiritual experience. Deep, intense, convincing, common to all who have overstepped a certain limit of the active mind belt into horizonless inner space, this is the great experience of liberation, the consciousness of something within us that is behind and outside of the universe and all its forms, interests, aims, events, and happenings. Calm, untouched, unconcerned, illimitable, immobile, free, the uplook to something above us, indescribable and unseizable, into which, by abolition of our personality, we can enter. The presence of an omnipresent eternal witness Purusha, the sense of an infinity or timelessness that looks down on us from an august negation of all our existence and is alone the one thing real. This experience is the highest sublimation of spiritualized mind looking resolutely beyond its own existence. No one who has not passed through this liberation can be entirely free from the mind and its meshes. But one is not compelled to linger in this experience forever. Great as it is only the mind's overwhelming experience of what is beyond itself and all it can conceive. It is a supreme negative experience, but beyond it is all the tremendous light of an infinite consciousness, an illimitable knowledge, an affirmative absolute presence.